All right, it's book club day 18. Welcome back. This is your host, Nathan Crankfield. You know what it is. Today, we're talking about some marriage. So this is really good. I think it's really beautiful how he gets into marriage here, because we recognize that over the last 75 to 100 years, the devil has had his way with marriage. Very, very sad to see what's happened to the state of marriage in our country. Emily and I, we were actually watching a reel today. We both sent it to each other on Instagram of these guys. I think I saw it on Jessica Kramer's story, actually. These college guys who are being asked, like, what's the proper order in your life? None of them had kids yet, but they were like, your mother, your wife, and your daughter. Like, who comes first? Rank order. None of them said wife. It was all either mother or daughter. Most said mother, daughter, wife. And their logic for that was your wife is replaceable, but your mother and your daughter are not. Now, I'm going to get into that in a podcast episode. But I shared that story just to point out the fact that the devil has made his progress, you know, when it comes to marriage. And he talks here about how through the poets and novelists persuading humans that a curious and usually short-lived experience, which they call being in love, is the only respectable ground for marriage. And so this is part of the interesting thing about marriage in today's world, is that we just largely view it as a subjective thing. Right, it is temporary. It is replaceable. You can end it. It doesn't have to. It's not a lifelong commitment. You get to kind of pick and choose when you feel like it's not serving you anymore. And if you're not happy in your marriage, then it's totally justified to go ahead and get a divorce. This is the essence of no fault divorce. You don't have to have a good reason. There doesn't have to be infidelity or abuse for you to get divorced. You can just do it. You can just, you're not feeling it anymore. Go ahead and call it. Go ahead and call it. Just get divorced. What's the big deal? And we see this happening all the time in today's world. People get divorced for no reason. People just file for divorce and boom, marriage is over. Your problems are solved, right? And it's really sad. It's obviously tragic. There's a lot of families that get broken up this way. Lots of devastation and problems in children's lives, you know, when this kind of stuff happens. And we never really fully take the time to stop and think about the consequences of this and just how it impacts, you know, the impacts are so far reaching in our world, in our country, and in the church, right? Because we have these relationships that are just kind of falling apart, and people let them fall apart because why? Why not let them fall apart? But he says here that, again, that those feelings, being in love is the only respectable ground for marriage, that marriage can and ought to render this excitement permanent. So that honeymoon phase, the devil has convinced us that this honeymoon phase of just joy and lightness and just always loving being around each other and the easiness of the early stages of a relationship, they should be permanent. And if they're not permanent, a marriage that does not do so is no longer binding, right? So this is the difference, right? When we make your vows and you say it for better, for worse, for richer, or poorer, sickness and in health, until death do us part, it's like, people are saying that and they just don't even mean it. There's so many parts of the wedding vows that in the average kind of lukewarm person's life, they don't mean. We don't think about the seriousness of this. I've told this story, I think only personally before. I don't think I've ever shared it publicly, but I remember on our wedding day, I think I was actually walking my mother down the aisle to her seat before, like this is like the pre-wedding, the pre-game kind of entrances. And I was very serious on my wedding day at the beginning. And I think some people thought that was surprising. One of Emily's family members was like, Nathan, smile. And I was like, I don't feel like smiling. Because to me, there was like, yes, there's a lot of joy and excitement and nervousness and all that kind of stuff. But there was also this profound sense of, wow, this is a really big deal, you know? And I remember just feeling that at different points in my life, like, wow, this is a really big deal. And what this means for the remainder of my life. I remember that kind of like my Ranger School graduation day. I remember feeling like, wow, this is awesome. I'm about to get my Ranger tab, but now I have to wear that Ranger tab every day. Same thing with getting the ring, right? Oh, wow, I'm about to get this wedding ring. Now I have to wear this wedding ring every day as a sign of my wife's love and fidelity for me, and know that she's wearing a ring that's a sign of my love and fidelity for her. All the vows that we're going to take today, I have to live those out every day of our lives. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what kind of hardships and difficulty we might face, what kind of tragedy we might face, but I'm making a commitment today that no matter what, we're going to stick it out. And that's something to be serious about. It doesn't mean that you have to be serious on your wedding day. That was just the way that it kind of manifested in my life, but I think not enough people take it seriously to understand what that means and how serious of a commitment it really is. And so then he goes on to talk about how there's this juxtaposition here in this chapter of the devil's, the demon's approach and outlook on life and God's outlook and approach on life, which is God's is all about love, which is unity, making many things one, and how in his very nature, he is three in one, right? To demonstrate that love that unifies and actually supernaturally makes us one. We think about that in marriage, right? The two become one flesh. You also have this in just generally speaking in the body of Christ versus the devil, which thinks that everything is against each other, right? There's this constant competition. He says to be means to be in competition. So yeah, he says God described a married couple as one flesh. He did not say a happily married couple or a couple who married because they were in love, but you can make the humans ignore that, right? So this is exactly what I'm talking about here. And this is where, you know, if you listen to my Ephesians 5 episode and things like that, I get into this kind of stuff all the time, is that we take things that God has said and we just distort them to our own liking. So we want to say, oh, well, we're not in love. We don't have this or that. And the devil's point here is that you can just make humans ignore what God said. Yeah, God gave his commands. Yeah, God told them how they should actually live and operate and yada, yada, yada. But you can just make them ignore that. Just get them to disregard it. Doesn't really make a difference. And it's super easy, and you just kind of go about your day and keep on grinding. So yeah, it's really crazy to think about that. Yeah, he talks about here, you know, towards the end of just kind of the different ways that you can kind of direct him when it comes to marriage. He says, in the first place, humans who have not the gift of continence can be deterred from seeking marriage as a solution because they do not find themselves in love. And thanks to us, the idea of marrying with any other motive seems to them low and cynical. Yes, they think that. He even says, like, he's telling, you know, Wormwood, he's like, I know this is going to be kind of surprising to you, but they actually think that marrying for the, you know, the reasons God tells us to get married, right, to be fruitful and multiply, to have a lifelong partner that you can help get to heaven. He says they regard the intention of loyalty to a partnership for mutual help, for the preservation of chastity, and for the transmission of life as something lower than the storm of emotion. And this is, I rail against this all the time, and just this concept that we are constantly obsessed with emotion, obsessed with feelings, and putting our feelings above all else. And this is what it comes to. It makes us to, you know, honor and dignity and good things get subject, get placed underneath the priority of our emotions and our feelings. And so it can help people that are not chaste and not able to live out a chaste life without the assistance of marriage to delay marriage because they never felt like they were in love. I've never found the right person. There's all this BS. And I try to call that out when I talk about dating a lot of times, that we are just constantly looking for our soulmate. This one in a billion person that we just think is perfect for us and has everything we've ever wanted. And it's like, maybe that doesn't exist. You know, maybe there's things that I check 80% of Emily's boxes and she checks 80% of mine. And maybe that's good enough. Maybe God can help us to cover up 10% of that missing 20%. And we learn to live without that remaining 10%. That's very possible. Then he says here in the second place, any sexual infatuation, whatever, so long as it intends marriage, will be regarded as love. And love will be held to excuse a man from all the guilt and to protect him from all the consequences of marrying a heathen, a fool, or a wanton. I don't know what the hell a wanton means, but you think about the idea of marrying a heathen or a fool and how many men get caught up in that, and women, right? Where you're physically attracted to somebody and so you let it cover up all these other things. And I think about that in my own dating life. I had that experience as many times. I'm very grateful I didn't fall for the trap of marrying somebody that I was, you know, just very attracted to, but did not you know, feel equally yoked to, did not feel like we shared faith in common. And I mean, yeah, I never got like super close or anything like that, but I definitely had experiences like that where I felt like I may have done that and had friends who, you know, found themselves with the same temptations at different points in time. And so really interesting stuff. I mean, I love this chapter and the ones that are following it here as we dive a little bit deeper into marriage and what it means and how the demons like to use it and manipulate it and how God likes to use it, obviously, for our own good and for the good of society in the world and for the church. God bless you. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll see you tomorrow.